to be here this morning. It was about 19 years ago when I went off to university and I stopped being a full-time person here at Markham Missionary. But as I look around to all the faces that I am so thankful for, this church poured into my life. This church empowered me to be the person who God created me to be. I've got such great memories. I mean, I remember we would sit in the overflow room. And as the service was going, we would sit in that overflow room until Eric Pilkey got so frustrated that he'd open the overflow doors. And we would take Pastor Thurton's sermon outline and we'd put it underneath the back of the seat. And that gave us an indication as to how long the service was going to be. And when he got the point B, we would stare at each other and we'd say, "Are you kidding me? We're going to be here forever." It was real spiritual times here at Markham Missionary. I remember being empowered in youth group and then in college or careers coming back. And again, just to listen to God's voice, to be a person of doing, not just a person of listening, to be not just a hearer of the word, but a doer of the word. Going on the retreats to pitch and praise and to being a part as a little girl in the Pioneer Girls program. And then finally we got to be a part of the Awanas program, which meant that we could take gym. Because for some reason, Pioneer Girls weren't allowed to do gym. Anyway, we'll talk about that another time. I just want to thank you. To thank you for everything. A part of who I am today is because you obediently listened to God to speak into my life. And I want to thank you so much for that. So I want to talk to you a little bit today about a king. It's King Herod. It was in the year 40 BC. And he was known to become Herod the Great. Herod the Great was a man of magnificent construction. He was a man that brought in high taxes, but he was able to use those taxes to benefit his kingdom. And when it's benefiting his kingdom, basically it was to benefit himself. He was a man of great politics, and he was able to bring in countries from all over to be able to come into the marketplace, to be able to contribute to his kingdom. And by that I mean himself. He was considered to be Herod the Great, but he was a king who was depressed. And he was a king who was paranoid. He was so paranoid that he was scared that people were going to take over his kingship. So much so that he had 10 or 11 wives. He had 43 children. His favorite of his wife was Miriam. He loved her. But one day he got scared that she was going to try to take over his kingship, that she was trying to convince one of her sons to become the next king. So he killed her. And he killed her son as well. And then he thought that maybe his mother-in-law, Miriam, didn't necessarily approve of him killing her. So he killed her too. And then as it was getting close to his death, he thought that some of his sons were becoming quite eager to take over his throne, that he had them killed. Anybody who spoke out against him, he had them killed. It got to the point where he was dying a horrific death. He was in such pain. But he knew that when he died, nobody would cry. And so he brought in 12 of the most dignified men in the country, and he put them into prison. And he demanded that when he died, that they be executed. If they're not going to cry for him, at least they would cry. He was a terrible, horrible, paranoid man. And he was their king. He was the king of the Jews. He was the king that when Jesus was born and the wise men came to search for this new king of the Jews, that King Herod sent them off to find Jesus and said, when you find him, come back to me so that I might go and worship him too. But we know the story. He wasn't going to go and worship him. He was going to go and kill him. And when the wise men didn't come back, he then sent out for all children under the age of 2 to be killed in hopes that this new king of the Jews would also be destroyed. He was a horrible man. But he was also a man of great construction. And he wanted people to know how great and powerful he was. So in the middle of his kingdom, he built a mountain. It's called Mount Herodion. And he had slaves and he had construction workers. And they came and they brought sand and dirt from everywhere. And he built this mountain on the top of the mountain. On the top of the mountain, he built his palace. This mountain could be seen from everywhere in Jerusalem. It was a reminder to everyone that he is king and he is not to be messed with, and you could never, ever keep him out of your mind, because everywhere you went, you could see this mountain. Well, one day, Jesus' disciples, they were trying to cast out a demon. If you turn with me to Matthew 17. Matthew 17, verse 14. Matthew writes, when they came to the crowd, a man approached Jesus and knelt before him. Lord, have mercy on my son, he said. He has seizures and is suffering greatly. He often falls into the fire or into the water. I brought him to your disciples, but they could not heal him. You unbelieving and perverse generation, Jesus replied, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me. Sometimes I wonder if Jesus had bad days. Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of the boy, and he was healed at that moment. Then the disciples came to Jesus in private and asked, why couldn't we drive it out? He replied, because you have so little faith. Truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. If you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you will be able to say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Now, either nobody in this world has ever had faith as small as a mustard seed, because quite frankly, I've never been able to see somebody command a mountain move. I think if we all had faith as small as a mustard seed and took this passage literally, we could have some pretty sweet chess games. You know, and move them around, but I think, I just picture somebody getting hurt, and then that wouldn't be good. Jesus here isn't talking actually about literally moving mountains. If you can close your eyes and if you can picture, Jesus saying to his disciples, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, and then he points to the mountain of Mount Herodion, this mountain that was created, this mountain that was moved into its place. If you could imagine, Jesus points at Mount Herodion and he says, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you will be able to say to that mountain, move from here to there, and it will happen. Because Jesus is saying, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you will be able to fight the injustices that are happening in this world. You will be able to overcome the oppression that's happening to his people. You will be able to make things right in a world where there is so much wrong if you just have faith as small as a mustard seed. And if we turn to Hebrews 11, in Hebrews 11, we read the inspiration of people throughout Scripture who had faith as small as a mustard seed. and what they were able to do because they had faith as small as a mustard seed. In Hebrews 11, now sit back for a moment. This is a long one, but it's an inspiring one. Read about the people in our history, and it's because of their faith we are here today. Now, faith is confidence in what we hope for and insurance about what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command. So what is seen was not made out of what was visible. By faith, Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith, Abel still speaks even though he is dead. By faith, Enoch was taken from this life so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear built an ark to save his family. By his faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that is in keeping with faith. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. And by faith, even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he is as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sands in the seashore. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned." Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead, and so in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau in regard to their future. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff. By faith, Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt and gave instructions concerning the burial of his bones. By faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw he was no ordinary child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as a greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. By faith, he kept the Passover and the application of blood so that the destroyers of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land, but when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after the army had marched around them for 7 days. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. And what more shall I say? I do not have time. I do not have time to tell you about Gideon, Barak, Samson, and a guy with a really long name, about David and Samuel and the prophets, who had faith, conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of the lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. There were others who were tortured, refusing to be released so that they might gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning, and they were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went out in sheepskin and goatskin, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered to deserts and mountains, living in caves and in holes in the ground. These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what they had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. Oh, man. Thanks for having patience with that. But these were men and women of faith who said yes to God, who believed that when God called them to do something, that they knew that God had something great in store for them. And I wonder how many people said no. I wonder how many people said no to God because their faith was not faith in action. And as a result of them saying no to God, that their story isn't written in the book. And yet, to be inspired by those who said yes. And the Bible says that they didn't actually get to live out the promises that God had promised to them, but they knew in faith that one day, people would be able to live out the promises. And because of faith, because they had faith as small as a mustard seed, that they were able to put their faith into action, and they were willing to go, and they were willing to do because God called them to do it. I wonder what that means for you and I today, to have this faith in action. We have injustice all over this world, and I believe that Jesus Christ, when we turn people to him, that we can save this world, we can save this country, we can save this town. 4 years ago, Travis and I felt called by God to go to the Dominican Republic. We knew that we were being called to a village called Caraballo, and that's all we basically knew. We weren't going with an organization. We didn't have a house to stay in. We didn't have anybody who was going to take care of us and oversee us and make sure we settled in. We were just going to go and figure it out. Because this verse had inspired me. Moses didn't know what it was going to look like to say yes to God. But he did it anyways, and God just said, trust me. And sometimes I wonder, we are so planned and so calculated. We want everything to go right that if we see so much as a glimpse of something that's going to go wrong, we'd say, no, that's not going to work out. That's not going to work out. But we decided to go, and we decided to wing it. We just thought, let's just see. Let's just see what God's going to do for us. When we went, we had a week, because Travis had a week off of work. We're really fortunate, because Travis, he works for a company in the States. And so he travels back and forth. He's home most weekends, and once a month for an entire week in the DR. And for the rest of the time, he's traveling. So I like to tell people that he is my main sponsor. So I send him frequent updates of photos of children and stuff. I try not to lose that one sponsor. It's really hard having everything in one basket, right? And so I try to give him a good Dominican experience when he comes home. And so far he's happy. And he hasn't yet. I'll move on. And so we had this 1 week, because he had 1 week off work, to find a house, to find a car, to find internet to put into the house so that he can work from home. And it was amazing. In that 1 week, we learned so much fast. Like, just, I know we went there to work for God, but we also needed to find a truck to be able to work for God. So this isn't really like a selfish story, but we, at some point, all of the north coast of the Dominican found out that we were looking for a truck. And so we didn't have time to take public transport to all the places that had a truck. So we sat ourselves outside of the mechanic store. And so people would phone us and they're like, hey, we have a truck for you to look at. And we're like, great, come on over to this mechanic. And they're like, well, we can't come to that mechanic. You have to come to us. And we're like, no, we can't come to you. If you want to sell us a truck, you got to come to us. And then they said, well, are you going to pay for your gas? And I'm like, pay for your gas? I want to buy your truck. You know, just don't waste my time and I'm going to buy your truck. Don't send me something that isn't worth buying. Like, if you got something good, you don't have to worry about gas. I'm planning on buying your truck. And so we camped out at this mechanic's for 2 days as people would drive by with their trucks and we would look at it. And Travis and I just kind of sat there because the mechanic would come out and he had like his little way of telling whether the truck was good. And he would just say, nope, this isn't good. And some of the guys would get really angry, right? They're like, what are you doing? These are gringos, and we're Dominican. You know, you've got to stick up for the Dominican. And our mechanic's like, nope, I only listen to God, and I'm only going to be obedient to God. And so finally, we got the truck that we were going to buy, and so he says to the guy, he says, so how much are you going to sell it to them for? And so they gave a price, and so Benny, our mechanic, he said, yeah, but these guys are missionaries. You can't sell them for that. These guys are missionaries. And the guy said, yeah, but that's why I'm giving a Dominican price. And Benny's like, I don't want a Dominican price. I want a missionary price. And so we were really fortunate. We knew at that point, you know, we were pretty confident that things were going to be okay. Well, when we first started working in Cara Bayou full time, we had these ideas of what it is that we're going to do, which is generally the case, right? I've noticed that North Americans, we're all really smart. And if we just spend a good 3 weeks in the Dominican, we'd have all their problems solved. And it's amazing. We come up with really brilliant ideas that nobody in the country has ever thought about. I'm just kind of poking fun of us right now. I don't know if you got that. And so... Our ideas were quickly changed. And so we decided that the number one reason why this community is so poor is for three reasons. This community is poor because of lack of education. People over the age of 30, 5% of them have an education over grade 8. And so we thought, we have to keep everybody in school. We have to do whatever we can to keep everybody in school because education is so important. To focus on documentation. 50% of the community has no documents. They have nothing to say that they're Dominican or Haitian. And so as a result, they're illegal. They're illegal wherever they go. They don't have a right to an education. They don't have a right to a job. They have no rights whatsoever. They're just illegal people, and they were born that way. And so we wanted to work on documentation, and finally we wanted to work on transportation. Because they are so far in the middle of nowhere that it's too expensive for them to go and it's too expensive for them to come back. And it just makes it really, really hard. And so we thought, well, let's just focus on these things and let's see what happens. And, you know, when Travis and I first went down, we thought that we would fund everything. We'd save up our money for our next project, and then we'd spend it on our next project, and then we'd save up our money for our next project, and then that's how we were going to function. And what I didn't realize was, wow, there are so many generous people in this world. Our first project was to build a computer center. Bring in computers and bring in internet, and we had saved up $5,000 to build this community, this computer center. And what was amazing is people were coming in and they're saying, "So, what are you doing? What are you doing to Cara Bayou?" And I'd say, "Well, right now we're building a computer center, and we're going to bring in computers and internet and teach computer training and help people with their school when they have internet projects and teach them about the internet and just hope they don't get too carried away with Facebook." And they did. But that was our first project. And people started saying to us, wow, can can I contribute money toward that? And I was like, really? Seriously? That's, wow, sure. And this was happening all throughout our first project. And so then in the end, we didn't have to spend any of our money. That people donated toward this computer center. They donated computers, they donated the rooms, they take specific projects to do. And it was just amazing how good everyone was, how good God was. And so then we decided that, you know, we have to keep everybody in school. And the number one reason why children don't go to school is because they don't have the required uniform. So we thought, well, hey, let's just see how this fundraising thing goes, and let's just go and tell everybody about school uniforms and see if anybody wants to help send a child to school. And so we went to, we were here at Markham Missionary, we went to my church in Collinwood, and we were talking about school uniforms, and people donated. And we were able to send 3 children from every household in Carrot Bayou to school. And it was absolutely amazing. The school attendance skyrocketed, so much so that the director comes to me and he says, Megan, we've got a problem. The problem is, like, it's great that you've got all these kids to go to school, but we don't have the room, and we don't have the desks, and we don't have the teachers. So we're going to have to send some of the kids home. And I'm like, what? No, we got to keep everyone in school. And so they're like, we're going to have to send people home, and we don't know who. But we just don't have the resources for all these students. And so I said, like, what are we going to need? And they said, well, we can provide an extra teacher, but we're going to need another schoolroom, and we're going to need desks and everything for that schoolroom. So I'm like, oh, my goodness, like, we have to pray. We have to pray. We got to let this happen because the children need to stay in school. 2 weeks later, I got a phone call from some people in Wasega Beach. They had been trying to raise money to build a bridge in Carrot Bayou that goes over the river to make it a lot easier to pass. And so they called me and they were like, Megan, we've got this problem. We were trying to raise $80,000 to build this bridge, but we haven't even come close. All we have is $7,000. Is there anything that you can do with this $7,000 that is just as good as a bridge? I'm like, yeah, we need a classroom, and we need desks, and we need a blackboard and everything. And they're like, done. And in 3 weeks, we had this classroom built, and none of the children had to stay home from school. It was amazing. God's hand in that whole situation. People stepping in on faith, and we didn't get exactly what we wanted, but God's plan was so huge, and it was so beautiful. And it was incredible. And then for transportation, trying to help, again, keep people in school. And we had these students that once they turn 18 or they go to high school, they have to go to school in the next town. And that town is a 15-minute drive away. It's about an hour walk away. And that's mostly when people drop out of school. Because during the day it's not so bad, but at nighttime it's too dangerous for them to walk back from school. It's because they have to walk through the sugarcane fields, and that's just a dangerous walk at night. And so most people drop out of school. And we're able to, again, just talk to people and have conversations. And people stepped up to make donations to be able to provide transportation to take those adults to school. And take the high school students to school. And the most beautiful thing was not only the high school students being able to continue to go to school, keeping everybody in school for as long as possible, but all of a sudden, that night for night school, 35 adults over the age of 30 showed up to get on that bus. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, we got to learn how to read. They all didn't have an education. They were all starting in grade 1. And this year, right now, they're all in grade 3. And they are so fun. They walk around as the educated people in the village. And there was one time I was driving to school, and they were practicing their vowels together. It was amazing. It was incredible. And then you all know about the documentation. I mean, documentation was my passion, and I was constantly praying to God, you know, please, please help us, you know, fight this injustice that's happening in these people's lives. And then all of a sudden, this window of opportunity came last September. And you allowed me to talk to you all about it. And it was this faith as small as a mustard seed, saying we've just got to keep going. We just have to keep fighting, because in September, the government passed a verbal law saying that everybody has till the end of October who were born in the Dominican, who have absolutely no identification, they have until the end of October to register with the Dominican government. And we had no idea what that looked like. We had no idea. Like, it was so hard to figure out this process of how to get everybody registered. And but at the very last day of the timeline, God just made it happen. And all the children who we were working on, they all were able to pass the system. I don't know if the story makes so much sense in my head. And I don't know if it's getting out. But basically, what it's to say is that the children who were born in the Dominican Republic to Haitian parents who had no identification, and so as a result, they were given nothing and therefore considered a stateless group of people, they all now have birth certificates. Dominican birth certificates to say that they are Dominican, and they now have a right to go to school. They have a right to work. They have a right to not live in this country with fear in their hearts of being deported. They have all the rights of being the Dominican. But then in January, this is where you guys came in. In January, we got notification that the government just discovered Kara Bayou. And the problem with Kara Bayou in the eyes of the government is that 50% of the people living in this village are illegal. And the government didn't know. Well, they say that they didn't know that Kara Bayou had existed. And so they are angry, and they made a declaration that on June 17th of 2015, all those people have an opportunity to be documented, to be given residency in the country. And if they do not successfully register by June 17th, 2015, they will be deported. And it was said that Kara Bayou was going to be one of the first villages that they'll go through to deport everybody. And so we had just legitimized all of their children, right? We just got all of their children Dominican birth certificates. And I'm thinking, if all of these adults get deported, we're going to have a village of orphans. And I don't really like children that much. So I was thinking, we have to legitimize all of these adults. And the biggest problem with legitimizing the adults is, the first problem was money. It was going to cost up to $40,000 to be able to legitimize all of these adults. And I'm thinking, how in the world are we going to get all this done? Not only that, but the process was so complicated. And we just couldn't figure it out. And the reason why we couldn't figure it out is because the government basically was making it up as they went along. They would realize that, no, this doesn't make any sense, so they would change the rules. And so as we were going in this one direction of getting these documentation, the government said, no, we don't really need these documentations anymore. We now need these documentations. And so we would turn around, and we'd start working on these documentations. And then the government would say, yeah, but we need to do it a little bit differently. So then we'd have to turn around and start all over again. And it's fine if you're just doing it for yourself. But in Kara Bayou, we're working on 170 people. And so every time, you know, there was another twist that we had to work on, we had to fix all of that for 170 people. And I've got to tell you, this was the most stressful, discouraging thing that I have ever, ever been through. And it was just depressing. Because up until July 10th, we'd been working on this for 7 months. And July 10th, it still all looked hopeless. It looked absolutely hopeless. It looked like we were going to fail. And I am such a competitive person. I do not fail. And yet, it looked like we were going to fail. And the only thing that we could look at was this. God has provided up till this point. God is showing us miracles all the way through. I came to you, and I know that you saw the video that we created because we're just so thankful, but I came here to Mark a Missionary, and I went to a few other churches, and I gave the worst fundraising speech ever. I said, we need to raise $40,000, and it's probably not going to amount to anything. You know, we're probably going to fail. But we have this opportunity to change people's lives. We have this opportunity to make it so that everybody in the Dominican Republic, in my, the community that I work in, to be legitimate so they can go to school, so that they can work, so they can have an opportunity to participate in this country. We have this opportunity that will not only affect the lives of the people that we're changing today, but for generations to come, 1,000 years from now. The lives of the children 1,000 years from now will be so much more better because of the process that the adults were going through today, and we had this opportunity. And what I couldn't believe is that people responded to the worst fundraising campaign ever, and we were able to raise the money. We didn't have to turn one person away, and it was absolutely amazing. And August 1st was the ultimate deadline, and everybody who was in the process, they've all been given a 1 to 2 year extension. And I think, and what that means is that everybody right now who's in the process, they're allowed to work, they're allowed to go to school, they're allowed to participate as if they were a Dominican, even though they were born in Haiti. They are now, they now have residency in the country. And it's absolutely amazing. And what it took was faith as small as a mustard seed. And there was so much negativity involved in it all. There were so many times that I wanted to quit. So many people on the island saying, Megan, why are you doing this? It's not going to work out. It's not going to work out. Everybody's going to be. And just constant hits, right? Just constant sucker punches in the shoulder. And I just had to say, stop talking to me. I don't want to hear it. Because what if it does work out? What if we quit? What if we quit and we just say it's not going to work out? And because of our negativity, we just say, it's probably not going to work out because it's not fitting into our perfect plan. And so we quit. And then we find out on August 1st, that final deadline, that if everybody was in process, that they would all be given legitimate 1 to 2 years. But we quit too soon. And so as a result, I then have to walk through the village and look in people's faces and say, you know what? I didn't try. I'm so sorry. I didn't do everything that I could possibly do, and I'm so sorry. I quit. And as a result, you're going to get deported, and I'm so sorry. It's a lot to do with my fault. I wanted to say that I did everything, that we did everything we possibly could to make things right. That if in the end it didn't work out and everyone was going to be deported, that we could say it wasn't us because we did everything we possibly could to make things right. And we did. We did everything we could to make things right. And as a result, we have been able to change the lives right now of 354 people in the village. And I am so, so excited. And I am so thankful. But realizing that all it took was faith as small as a mustard seed. A faith in action, not just to believe that God can do something, but to believe that God could use me to do something, to believe that God could use you to do something. And what I've learned from Hebrews 11 is that it does not matter if you are 10 years old or if you are 150 years old, that God will continue to use you. And if you allow God to use you with your faith as small as a mustard seed, that you will be able to see mountains moving all over the place, to see God's work at hand in everything that you're doing. But ultimately, what I've learned through this whole documentation process is that for the first time in their lives, they are free. They're walking around. They can walk around the whole country, and they are free. But in watching them walk around in their freedom, there are some people who got to go to Haiti for the very first time to visit their family that they haven't seen in decades because they're allowed to come back. It's such a beautiful thing. But in their freedom, eventually their freedom is going to be forgotten. They're going to forget what it was like when they were not free, because eventually that this is going to become their norm. Because unless we know Jesus Christ as our personal Savior. Everything that is introduced to us as satisfying, as freeing, unless it's Jesus Christ, it's only temporary. It will not last. And so although we function on looking at education and documentation and transportation, we also look at the lives of the individual and the importance of them knowing Jesus Christ as their personal Savior. So it's gotten to the point in the village of Kira Bayou that I don't really have a lot of time to do the projects that we're working on. Instead, I have to use other people in the village to actually do the projects because I spend all of my time in conversations with people. My whole day is spent just people coming into my office or walking up to me because they want to talk about a problem that they're having. And in talking and having conversations with them, I get to talk to them about Christ. And I get to talk to them about Christ's way of doing things. If they're in conflict with one another, then I say, hey, you know what? Jesus says that we need to go to the first person first, and we need to talk to that person. And so then we go, and we have this conversation where the two people have a conversation together. And in the end, they come up with a restored relationship, and they look, and they're like, wow, that Jesus thing really worked. Wow. And it's been really cool being able to share Jesus Christ, knowing that ultimately that is their freedom. That is what's going to change their lives because he changed my life. He changed our lives, and he has changed many of their lives, and there's many lives that he still needs to enter and change. It's exciting. It's exciting to have that faith as small as a mustard seed, to be able to see that mountain and to say, if I just put my faith into action, not just to believe that God can change this world, but to know that God could use me. And to have that faith into action to say, I'm going to allow God to use me. And then to be able to see that mountain move, it is absolutely amazing. I just want to encourage you. Many of you, because of your faith, as small as a mustard seed, putting your faith into action, many of you spoke into my life. Many of you influenced my life, and who I am today has a lot to do with a lot of you. And I want to thank you for that. And I want to encourage you not to give up on each other, but to encourage each other. To encourage each other to be all who it is that God created you to be. To walk alongside each other, together to move those mountains. Yeah. Amen.